Here's a guy that proves once and for all that intelligent design and evolution can actually coexist.
Hi, this is John St. Augustine sitting in, and I'm really excited today on a lot of reasons. Number one is every time I get a chance to sit down with somebody who makes people laugh, especially during very difficult times, they have my attention, number one. And number two, when I get to sit with somebody who has come from a very difficult background and still finds things to laugh about, he really has my attention. And finally, we'll get to this in a little bit, anybody who has received another body part from someone else and has gone on to really change their life and change lives of other people, they really have my attention. George Lopez, you'd have to be born on some other planet and not living on this one for the last 30 years to know that he is one of the most prominent Mexican-Americans in the Latino community who has come out and made every race laugh, at themselves mostly, and he joins me this morning. How you doing?
That's a wonderful introduction. Yeah, I'm going
to
keep that and
10
just
minutes
play
to do
it.
That.
Even when I walk into a department store, I'm going to have play that over the...
Anything else you'd like me to say?
Yeah, I think you covered it. Right. Also, 10 handicap golfer.
You know, I was getting to that down here. But listen, you know, you've been making people laugh for a long time, but it wasn't always that way for you. You grew up at a very difficult time, and I was wondering, even though I was watching the Oprah show, what is the spark that keeps you still laughing, even though we are in difficult times, you've been through difficult times? How do you find the things that we should be laughing at that we don't and make us, you know, kind of look at that a little bit?
You know, that's a really good question. I mean, we had so little growing up, and it just was funny to me to see my grandmother mop with a broom that wasn't a mop. You know, those kind of things. I've always kind of had a vision for her and the way she sounded, or telling me that I couldn't do things, and instead of making myself having it make me angry, it made me laugh.
Like that whole nightlight thing.
Yes, the whole nightlight. So you know, like I would be reading a book and she would turn the light off on me and I'm like, I'm reading. And then she would say, also, now you read. So it just was just funny to me. And what's really interesting is before my show and before I had some success, in the clubs, people would say, well, he's kind of like this. I don't really kind of get it.
Who did they compare you to in the early days?
You know,
I'm
not sure that there was a comparison. One of the things that I thought was the best comparison was that I didn't get compared to Paul Rodriguez. Because they would say, like, well, he's not like Paul Rodriguez. I wanted to be my own person, even though I didn't really know what that person was going to be like. I always had to have my own thoughts be my own. And if you look at the stand-up, they're not really jokes as much as they are a string of recollections. And you know, my wife is, I was always really introverted. My wife is an extrovert, and she'll say, why are you so quiet? And it's really because I'm processing information. It's like, excuse me, you know, somebody puts on their computer, do not touch,
right?
Like a stick pad.
Leave me be.
Leave me. So on me, I process information, and now it's just funny to me, and it's universal. And in becoming, you know, the show and the stand-up, now the best reward is that when people say, I didn't get it, now everybody gets it, like you said. I mean, there's some people that came to see me at Radio City Music Hall in New York that were Israeli. They're Indian. They're you know, they're from the Middle East, and they all get it, because poor
is poor.
Is poor.
It don't matter where you're living. You got dirt in your pockets. It doesn't matter where you're at.
So, you know, we managed to still find, I mean, it's just things, you know, like I saw a guy washing a car that looked like it wouldn't even start, but that guy was washing that thing like it was a Rolls. I mean, just, I love that in your mind, how your imagination makes you believe that things are better than they are.
But could you have ever imagined growing up the way that you did and the route that you've taken to get where you're at, that you'd be this, you know, you have this ability to take things that are obvious and absurd and make them more obvious and absurd, is which we laugh at. You become a spokesperson, obviously, for being more positive in life. I mean, that's like this whole offshoot of the work that you do. Could you have ever thought of that?
No. You know, I didn't, you know, it's funny because when you even dream about making it in whatever business, I didn't dream beyond doing The Tonight Show. Back then, everybody wanted to do The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson.
Sure.
So after I did The Tonight Show with Johnny Carson with 91, I sat around going, okay, now...
Now what?
What am I going to do? I'm not really a good actor. I haven't really acted, and I have no agent. I just continue to do stand-up, and when I saw other guys, the difficult part for me was to see other guys get shows and get plucked from the clubs, and for me to still be there. And I at some point, in life as it works, the less you worry about other people, the better off you're going to be. So inherently being Latino, we're always worried about what other people are doing. And my grandmother was like, go tell them that their clothes have been on the line for 3 days. Tell them to take them off. I can go over and tell them to take their clothes off the line.
It's really funny. But the persistence gene that you have to, or the persistence muscle that you have to learn how to flex and to keep strong when you're going in, especially in the media and in the entertainment business. I mean, now that you're quote-unquote on top, do you find that you still have to keep that part of yourself alive no matter what?
Well, I think you do because you want to continue to do better things. 4 years ago in April, I would read those Star and the Enquirer and Us, and they're fantastic magazines. But being in the business, it consumed a lot of my time, and I knew I had useless information in my head. And I said, you know, I don't think I can be the best that I can be with useless information in my head. So I made a decision that I wasn't going to read those magazines. I wasn't going to look on the internet about what people thought of me. I wasn't going to Google myself to see how many hits, and I was just going to be honest about my own work and let that speak for itself. Very old days, like 50s, where you had to go to the theater to hear about somebody. You know, you had to read the paper. So I went back and I thought, you know, I'm going to do it the way they used to do it. If I hear about it, then it must be important.
So you went back to fundamentals.
I went back to the fundamentals. And it's worked well for me.
Really
has worked well for me.
Well, it was interesting to me when I watch your show on TV, it seems to be like we've had the Cosby Show and we've had All in the Family. We've had all these things. And the one thread that I've seen through all of them is no matter what color you are, where you come from, what language you speak, we all have issues to deal with. So you're bringing to light things that I can relate to, no matter how many kids I have or how old they are. When you're talking to your daughter on TV, I'm like, that's what I said to my daughter last night. So it's the brilliant writing, but it's the delivery. Do you think that's your background that allows you to deliver it with that kind of...
When we were deciding to do the show, we didn't know what kind of show it was going to have, what the temperament or the tone was going to be. So as I started to talk, remember, I'm like an introvert, so we sat there for about a month, and I started to tell stories about growing up. And it was good for me because I was touching on things that I hadn't thought about in a long time. A lot of them were very painful. You know, I started crying in the room, and those guys were, then they have like an assistant typing, and the two guys I was working with, they'd look over at me and go, is this dude crying? And I'm like, yeah, it was, you know, really painful. And they're like, if you want to stop, I'm like, no. And this was in an office in Warner Brothers. So we found the bottom. And then we knew the top was going to be laughter and good stories. A lot of those stories in the show are very true. You know, I didn't know my father, and you know, my daughter was growing up, and my mother, you know, in the show treated me with disrespect, and she was like a manhunter. You know, and
I was watching one the other night where you stuff the bra.
Yes, that was Jerry Springer's.
His walk-on. I saw that.
Yeah, I didn't want them to be together, so I planted a bra in his jacket.
Well, it wasn't just any bra; it was a
huge, massive, massive bra. Yes, and you know that kind of stuff. I did sabotage by the times my mom were around, but the show has a real second life, a bigger life in syndication. Everybody loves it. And when I was a little kid, and I wanted to dream. I never dreamed in brown. I always dreamt in black and white. So and now little kids and all kids come over and say, hey, we really love your show. And they're all multicultural and they're different colors and they're little girls and boys. And for me, because I had so little and I had so little respect, that when that happens, it really makes you feel good about what you've done.
Isn't it?
It really is.
But I can tell you, I mean, I've had everybody sit in front of me. And the eyes are the window to the soul, as they say. And as you're talking, this is really important. It's almost an offshoot of being a funny guy and a comedian and an actor. It's more of an ambassador, isn't it?
It's become an ambassador from somebody who wasn't very comfortable in my own skin or the color of the skin. And then to do all of that and to know that, you know, my stand-up is very adult. And I even say, listen, no kids, don't bring the kids. But then Nickelodeon is that, and then some movies that I've done, and then you know, in November I'll have my own talk show.
Your own talk show, on TBS coming up. And what do you expect? I mean, this will be a little time before people hear. What do you want to take? What direction with
you
that
know,
show?
I was fortunate enough in 1989 to be on Arsenio Hall when Arsenio Hall first started, and I was there all 5 years that he was on. I did, I think, 16 appearances, and it really the city that made me that I had my most success in was in Chicago back then.
Really?
I used to work at the Funny Firm.
Oh, sure.
312 West Grand. That's a Quiznos, I believe. And what I saw was I saw an audience that was excited. I saw a diverse music. I saw an inclusive atmosphere. And I saw somebody who was present. And I think a little bit now in late night, there seems to be a disconnect from being present. And I want to bring that back, that energy back, that diversity
the
back.
The fundamentals.
And the fundamentals.
You're back to the same thing,
the
aren't you?
Of just doing a good show. Mm.
George Lopez joining me this morning on Oprah Radio. John St. Augustine sitting in at XM 156 and Sirius 195. Switching gears a little bit, one of the reasons, as I mentioned before, I was excited to have you in is that we have something in common, you and I. Not much, but something in common. I'm not as funny and I'm a little bit taller, but that's where it ends. My daughter was born with a kidney defect. Her the ureters didn't insert in the bladder all the way. Mm. And so when she was 5 years old, they took her right kidney out, and they said she'd need a transplant within a couple of years. So we made it 8 years. And then it turned out, against all the odds, my father and grandfather both died of polycystic kidney disease. I was the perfect donor. I was the perfect match at 13. So we knew for a long time since she was born this was going to have to happen. So we did the transplant in 2002, and she became a new person. You know, she mm-hmm. was like the first time in her life at 13 that she was healthy, and what that feels like as a parent. And 5 years ago, you find out
yes.
that you have challenges with your kidney, and I mean, you're not 13, obviously. Well, maybe 16 at that time, but, you know, I mean, you're a grown man finding this out. How was that?
Do you know what the problem that I had is? My ureters were narrow and didn't drain completely correct. Mm-hmm. Correct. So it backed urine
up. But your
into
whole
the
life.
Kidneys, my whole life.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, we didn't go to the doctor when we
sure.
felt bad. We just
yeah.
kind of let it go.
Yeah.
And, you know, I had some issues, and I had moderate borderline hypertension at mm-hmm. 18. I was in probably the best shape I've ever been.
Because people don't know kidneys are the thing that regulates blood pressure. Mm-hmm. I mean, if they're not working, it ain't working.
Yes. So yeah. if, you know, if your car engine light was on,
mm-hmm.
most people
would
tape get it
over
fixed.
It. No, you put tape
we
over it.
We put a picture of a loved one over it, and you can't see that you're running oil 12,000 miles.
That's right.
And
that's
you
right.
can't wonder why your car. So,
yeah.
so I advocate early prevention and early detection. If anything I do is to, I wet the bed when I was a kid, and there mm-hmm. was a problem because I couldn't drain correctly, and
yeah.
then at night when I was relaxed, so my grandmother, instead of, you know, making an example out of me and putting my sheet in the air,
yeah, right.
and she'd go, French toast. It looks like French toast. So if she would have taken me to the doctor, this is the really important thing. If she'd have taken me to the doctor,
yeah.
I would have saved both kidneys. I'd had yeah. stents put in, and I would save kidneys. And now when we did a show about the exact same
yes.
thing that happened to me, we got a couple of emails. One was from a father whose son went to bed, and he used to yell at him, and he took him to go get checked, and he had something wrong, and they found something. Instead of yelling at him, they
right.
actually found a condition.
But I don't know if it's against all odds, but interestingly enough, your wife turns out to
yes.
be the person. I mean, you really owe her now big time for
oh.
the rest of your life. But I mean, how did that happen? How did you find out that she was the match, and what did that feel like when you realized this person you married all these years later is the one's going to save your life?
When I first found out that I had advanced kidney disease, the guy called it, and that mm-hmm. both my kidneys were running at 55%, like 98.
Mm-hmm.
She says, "I'll give you one of mine." She's sitting like at the end of the desk, and I'll give you one of mine. I'm like, "Please, Ann, this guy's
I'm talking
me that
to
I'm
the
really
guy, right?
sick. Yeah. I'll give you one of mine." She was the only person tested.
Really?
And it's a battery of tests,
you know. It's a thing.
And I've never been fortunate in my life. I was always an example of don't do this and you don't want to be like him. But in everything that's happened to me in my life, meeting her. And although I did kind of fight it because I didn't see healthy relationships, so I made it difficult on her, and she hung in there. But getting her to love me the way she did and love me enough to donate part of her body so that I can continue my life
mm-hmm.
is without question the greatest gift that I could ever have been given. Although I've given her many gifts of jewelry.
I was gonna say, substantial
and
value.
And we haven't even reached the top, apparently. We haven't even scratched the surface. This Christmas, I went crazy. I said, I'm going to throw it all out. I'm going to give her this and that
uh-huh.
and a necklace
uh-huh.
and pearls. And she's like, this is very lovely. Not, no, please, George, stop. It's enough. She just says, very lovely.
Yeah.
She's at the Oprah store across the street. It's not even open. They opened it for her.
I'm sure they did. George Lopez joining me on Oprah Radio. Last few minutes we have together. I'm fascinated by your fascination and your honesty. You know, a lot of people talk about their lives, but you seem to have the ability or the need to really be frank about who you are, where you've been, what your life is like. And when other people connect with that, even though we're laughing with you, we're looking at ourselves. Is that part of the deal we don't know about, or you didn't intend, but we get it?
Well, it's opposite of what I was. I was always, I always falsified the truth. I would always lie because things were so bad that I would say, what did you guys do this weekend? My grandpa wouldn't let me out. And I said, oh, I went to my cousin's house and we went swimming and had a barbecue. All lies.
All to cover up.
All to cover up the fact that I had nothing going on. Yeah. And I made up friends and made up situations and quit on everything. Quit on friends and quit at baseball and just quit. I was a quitter and I lied. Mm. A liar and a quitter. And through stand-up and through golf, interestingly enough, golf will expose every weakness that you have, and it doesn't care whether you're rich or poor. Mm-hmm. And I would hit the ball sideways, and I'd quit. And I just voices in my head, you know, like my coach saying, you know, go ahead and quit because that's what you are. And I just stayed with it. And even in comedy early on, I quit, and it just – I couldn't have everybody be right. I had to prove to myself that I could do something and not quit.
Was there an epiphany? Was there a time when there was a time you sat and said, you know what, this is it. I'm not lying anymore. This is the bottom line. I'm moving up. Was there an incident?
Yes. I'd lost my job, and I was living on my friend's couch in Pacoima, California in 1984.
I know. He just called in, by the way. You owe him $6. So.
It wasn't a very comfortable couch. And I remember waking up on my birthday in 1984 thinking, you know, I have nothing going on in my life. Even my grandparents had taken the key to the house from me.
These are the people that raised you.
Yeah, they said, we need the key back because you don't live here
anymore.
Wow. And I laid there and I thought, I got to do something for me. And I got to do something that I enjoy doing because I'm not happy with the way that my life is turning out. And at that point, April 23rd, 1984, I decided that I was going to stick with this. And I've stuck with golf the whole time.
Mm-hmm.
And I've been successful in it. And also I've been I've been more generous in success than I was than on the way up. Mm-hmm. I think in success I found generosity and a caring for other people that I didn't have when I was doing stand-up.
So the concept of transformation, going from who you used to be to who you are now, is like you're on Act 2. Is there an Act 3 for George Lopez? Act 3?
There's an Act 3. Act 3 is when the show starts. We're going to make that inclusive and help a lot of people and hopefully regenerate – I don't want to say hope. That one's been used.
No, regenerate, good. Hope is good.
Regenerate energy and regenerate enjoyment of the things that have happened in the past. That just because they happened in the past don't mean that they're relevant today. And also in the future, you know, the music that I love so much and those bands. I just had Chicago play at my kidney dinner.
Is that right?
And they were fantastic.
Fantastic, yeah.
And I love Chicago. So you see those guys and I go, you know, I'm going to put Chicago on my show and we're going to get relevant actors and actresses.
Excellent.
And we're going to have comedy and help comedians and help people. And from that, you know, help families at night and do things at night that nobody's really have done before, which includes interaction and helping people.
So what's the big aha for you over the years? If you look back on your life and you see this path that you've traveled on, that all these people have come in and out of, the way that you grew up, the circumstances you had to overcome, the golf game that's improved tremendously over the years. What's the big aha for you?
The big aha is that I'm more valuable than I've ever given myself credit for. I always disvalued myself, and I did it to myself. So the big aha is, you know, I really do have value, and I really can be somebody.
There's about 6 billion other people on the planet that need to get that message, too.
You're absolutely correct.
Yeah, it doesn't matter where they're at. George
and,
Lopez.
And humanity. I mean, it's really about, you know, you and I just met. We got along great. And it's really about humanity.
Well, I'm faking it.
Yeah. I'll listen to the playback.
Yeah, that's right. It's all good. Really nice to meet you.
Thanks, John. I appreciate it.
No problem. George Lopez on Oprah Radio, John St. Augustine, XM 156, Sirius 195. We'll be back with more after this.
I was walking down the street one day.